I heard the number for this conference was like 3,000. Is that what you heard?
In terms of attendees, yeah.
Yeah, attendees.
Yeah, something like that. And I think it's one of the bigger conferences they've had in the stadium. Yeah, or on Madeira in general, because this is like the biggest venue.
This is a place I would go on a vacation with my wife. It's just such a nice place.
Yeah, instantly fall in love with it.
When's Bitcoin going to go to $1 million? I don't know. I mean, I follow Samson. He knows. I think we're going to see 100,000 sometime pretty soon. I mean, the halving's coming and so forth. I think it really will get turbocharged when we see the next financial. I mean, Jay Powell pushing up interest rates has slowed everything down in the monetary debasement world. I think we're about to have something else break. When something does break, I think we're responsible to print more money again, as they always have.
Yeah.
And that will really be the next turbocharged move that'll take Bitcoin to certainly 200,000, maybe headed towards 500,000.
This is the Freedom Footprint Show, a Bitcoin philosophy show with Knut Svanholm and me, Luke DeWolf.
And we love to expand our freedom footprint. We hope you do too. The best way to do that is, of course, to emit as much freedom dioxide as possible. The best tool we have for doing that is, of course, Bitcoin.
Before we dive into today's show, we'd just like to tell you a little bit about how you can support us. First, to support us directly with Bitcoin, visit our Geyser page at geyser.fund/project/freedom. Or you can send us sats directly to freedom@geyser.fund. You can also support us as you listen by listening to the podcast on Fountain. The app is available on Apple and Android, and you can stream sats or send a boost. It's the easiest way to support the show just by listening normally.
And if you don't care too much about Luke, you can always visit knutsvanholm.com, where you can buy my fabulous wine, my books, and a t-shirt or two. And if you don't feel like supporting your fellow Bitcoiners at all, at least like, subscribe, and brush your teeth.
But seriously, that stuff actually helps. It would be great if you could subscribe to the YouTube channel, like the videos, send us a comment or leave us a review. All this stuff really helps the show, seriously.
Click the damn bell. So thanks for tuning into the show, and we hope you enjoyed today's episode. Larry.
Yes.
Welcome back to the Freedom Footprint Show.
Oh, thank you. So nice to have you. Great to see you again.
Yeah, same to you. And welcome back to Madeira.
Yeah, fabulous to be here. I mean, as you know, we were here a couple years ago, right?
Yeah, it wasn't even 2 years ago.
Yeah, it was like June of a year and a half ago or something.
Yeah, a year and a half ago.
A year and a quarter, yeah.
Yeah, and now this is like a culmination.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, Andre's really done a great job.
Yeah, I'm lost for words. It's just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the speakers he got, we just listened to Michael Saylor. It was very impressive.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and I'm so fascinated with his passion. I mean, he doesn't need to do any of this, but
exactly.
I suspect he loves it.
Well, that's right. I mean, I think he really has the mission that we all have, which is to make the world a better place and fix the money, fix the world. I think, you know, he's an example of that, you know, a shining example. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think the love he gets back from the community is
but deserved. I mean, you know, he's obviously made a strong bet and he's embraced the community. He's been very generous to everybody in the community and has absorbed the ethos of the community. You know, I think he sounds more and more like every Bitcoiner as time goes by, you know, which I think I really like.
So let's do a little backstory on this whole Free Madeira thing.
Yeah.
Like we both ended up here for different reasons. So I'd like to hear your version of what happened one and a half years ago.
As you know, I think the onshore impetus for this was Andre Loja, who is a Madeiran and a Bitcoiner, and was able to take the president of Madeira to the Miami Bitcoin show and orange pill him, and kind of thought, this is interesting. You know, if we could turn Madeira into an orange pilled island, that would be really meaningful. And so he kept kind of working that with the legislature here and then also with some of the legislature over on the mainland island of Portland, or, you know, mainshore of Portugal, I'm sorry. And not Portland, I'm thinking of Maine. Yeah, I got my countries wrong. And so he reached out to Jeff Booth and said, hey, Jeff, you know, could you round up some Bitcoiners and bring them over here? And we'll all make a campaign to truly orange pill the president, the legislature of Madeira, and perhaps some of the legislature of mainland Portugal. And so Jeff reached out to friends he had in the community, and I feel very fortunate to be one of them. I'm not quite sure why I got picked, but I did, because I was an advocate of Bitcoin, also an advocate of gold prior to that. And, you know, he reached out to you and Obi and, I mean, you know, Troy Cross, and he kind of put together a cross-section. I don't know how many of us were there, maybe 10 of us or so.
A bit more, I think, between 15 and 20, maybe.
Okay, maybe total. So. And
I think some came in a bit later, like Rob Brinder, for instance. He tagged along later on.
Right. Yeah. So he got some people from all walks of life in Bitcoin. I mean, different, you know,
yeah.
I mean, as you know, Troy is kind of an energy guy and a mining guy. Yeah. And, you know, you come at it as a publisher and having written books.
Yeah,
and,
I don't think I was even in, like, I came from it earlier than, like, Jeff's cohort was one thing.
Oh, okay.
And even though I know Jeff and stuff, okay. I think the connection for me was through Andre. Because Andre, I had signed a contract with Andre for the Portuguese translation of the books.
I didn't realize that was that was your connection.
Then
okay.
Then I got to know Andre a little better in Miami, and also President Miguel and Prince Philip, who was also there with Daniel Prince. They shared. They were on the same plane together.
Exactly.
So we hung out in Miami, and one thing led to another. And
ended up here. You know, he ended up pulling this group together, and. We all came over here. And what did we spend? A week, maybe? Was it 10 days?
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of, we did a lot of meetings with different government officials. We talked a lot internally about how to make Madeira more of a Bitcoin-friendly island. They really wanted to create an initiative that would make make this a place where Bitcoiners would want to travel to. Because, you know, and that could boost, you know, tourism and income to the island. I mean, at the time, El Salvador had just adopted Bitcoin as their currency or as a, you know, as a reserve asset that they were going to hold. And we saw, and I think Madeirans saw how much that generated in terms of additional tourism to El Salvador as Bitcoiners were thinking, hey, this is a good place to go on vacation. And so Madeira thought, oh, that would work. I mean, because Madeira does happen to be a, you know, the tourism is a big part of the revenue of the, you know, the Madeira Island. So, I think there was that piece of it as well, but. They did a great job, pulled it all together. We, you know, I think it was an outstanding experience, and I think we made a little bit of headway. I, you know, the Portugal is part of the EU, and the EU is not particularly Bitcoin friendly. At least my understanding of it is that
it
isn't
particularly friendly in general.
Yeah, right. Well, I know, for example, the ECB is not at all Bitcoin friendly, and so you know there were limits as to how far the you know the Portuguese politicians can go. You know, with respect to, pushing for a full Bitcoin standard, but they could certainly support the development of Bitcoin on the island. And we all did that. So it was good. It was very good.
Yeah. And we had this think tank thing during the days. And then in the afternoons, we went out on different types of excursions.
There were some great excursions. Yeah. Andre rented a boat one day and we got to see a large part of the island, which is a gorgeous island. I mean, just fabulous. So
the island sells itself.
It does sell itself. I mean, highly recommend anyone who's watching this who hasn't been to Madeira, this would be a great place to take a vacation. It really would. It's a lovely place.
I remember the meetings. They were great because we got to see all these old buildings in the central Funchal and talk to all of these people in all these institutions. And Jeff was like the natural alpha male of the flock, right?
Yeah, you're right.
And there was one particular meeting where, Jeff wasn't there. And it was just like having the baboons trying to figure out who's the alpha during the meeting.
Oh, okay.
Know which meeting.
Yeah, I know which one you mean. With the power guys, right?
Yeah. That was really funny.
That like, was
from
a, very,
from a group psychology
it was
perspective.
A very funny
it was hilarious.
Meeting. Yeah.
No, but we had a great time. And for a few of us, it didn't stop here because we went to Lisbon and we were in Parliament there. And,
yeah, I went with you on that. I remember that. And that was fun.
Yeah, we talked to a bunch of politicians.
Right.
I think from the most quote unquote libertarian party.
Correct.
But also for the Social Democrats, I believe.
That's right.
And some right wing party.
Yeah.
And that was interesting to like see them take it in.
It was very interesting. I mean, they were receptive. That was, you know, it was just impressive. They were open minded and receptive.
Yeah, they weren't hostile.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what I mean by
that's. That's about as good as you can hope for.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. And something as new as this. Yeah. And so it was great. It was all good.
So when did you come in? Like yesterday?
Oh, for this particular trip?
Yeah.
So it's Friday. I flew overnight Tuesday. I'm in Florida in the wintertime. So I flew Miami, Lisbon, Madeira. I got here Wednesday morning.
Okay. So you've been here for a couple of days. Have you seen some of the places
I have not. I'd like to, and I've been through the downtown area a bit. But as you know how these things go, you end up, with some partners, we're running a fund, we're investing in Bitcoin things. So I've got fund meetings, I've got a podcast. And so I haven't had a lot of vacation time, but that's okay. I mean,
literally stealing your vacation.
No, you're not because we're at the conference and we just watched Sailor speak. And then, you know, I'm in an hour or two, I'm going to go back and be on a panel. So it's all good. This is just a break in the action. So
yeah. Yeah, yeah. I hope you get the chance to walk around Funchal and see all the places that accept Bitcoin now, because it's
I looked at the map. I mean, there was zero when we were here last time, and there are quite a few now. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really great to see.
Yeah.
Like, especially since this sovereign engineering cohort has been here for.
Yeah. Well, and some of our group moved here. Nico moved here, didn't he? Yeah.
Nico was already here.
Oh, was he? I didn't realize that. Yeah. Okay.
Rob moved here.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
And there's a bunch of other Bitcoiners that moved to the island after that thing. And we got a little bit of attention. So I think, and the more, it's like the Metcalfe's law, you know, the network, the value of the network is...
It grows, geometrically. Yeah, yeah,
because if we have 20 Bitcoiners here, the value of the network is immense because...
Compared to where it was. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and I think, especially after this event, that a lot of people are going to, you know, decide to stay here or consider moving here.
Well, and I don't know. I'd be curious. I didn't have a chance to ask Andre. I'd love to ask him. Have we seen more tourism as a result of the Bitcoin connection? You know, I don't.
Yeah,
I'd be interested. Yeah, I'd like to see the data point. They must have some information on that.
Could be hard to quantify, though.
Yeah, that's true. I mean,
well, didn't he say something about that? There was some millions of euros that they estimate is going to. Like, I mean, I think saying a number doesn't make any sense here. But there's. This conference is supposed to bring in quite a lot to the economy just from everyone traveling here. And I think there's something to that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I heard the number for this conference was like 3,000. Is that what you heard?
In terms of attendees, yeah.
Yeah, attendees.
Yeah, something like that. It's one of the bigger conferences they've had in the stadium, or on Madeira in general, because this is like the biggest venue
there is. Yeah.
So that's great, of course.
Yeah, yeah, it's all good. I mean, and you know, I now know that, you know, when I get a chance, I mean, this is a place I would go on a vacation with my wife, you know, because it's just such a nice place.
Yeah, it's instantly fall in love with it. It's impossible not to.
Yeah.
The show is sponsored by Amber App, the number one Bitcoin exchange in the Southern Hemisphere.
And the reason we partnered with Amber App is the people that work there, especially Izzy, my favorite hippie.
If you haven't seen it already, check out our episode with Izzy. It'll show you exactly why we just had to partner with Amber App.
Izzy focuses on the orange glowing light, and so do we. And we think you should too.
Amber App will be launching their version 2.0 soon and rolling out globally. They'll be including a non-custodial on-chain wallet, an anonymous Lightning wallet, a fiat wallet, and an exchange all in one. It's going to be a super app.
It's like WeChat, but without the CCP.
So stay tuned, follow Amber App on X, and check out their website for more information at amber.app. Next up, Wasabi Wallet, the privacy by default, open source, non-custodial Bitcoin wallet with CoinJoin built in. It's the easy-to-use, comprehensive, affordable way to make your coins private.
Oh, if you want a privacy for your Bitcoin, don't be an idiot samurai. Use a Wasabi Wallet now.
So check out wasabiwallet.io and download Wasabi today.
So anyway, from one thing to another, you've had some difficulties with your Twitter account. Yeah. Right? Can you tell us about that?
So I offer this as a kind of what not to do and, a matter of caution and warning and particularly probably for older people, because I think younger people might. I told my daughter what happened here, and my daughter was like, "Dad, you're an idiot. You know, anyone knows not to do that." But let me tell you what happened to me. I was out one Saturday morning and I started getting all these text messages, from my mobile provider saying, "Somebody's trying to change your SIM card. Do you approve of that?" And I said, you know, I replied, "Yes or no?" "No." Another one, you know, "Ask again." "No." I got like five or six of these. So somebody was clearly had the ability to get to my mobile provider and try and swap out my SIM card. They were trying to SIM swap me, which people who know about 2FA, two-factor authentication, a lot of it comes through a phone. And if you can steal somebody's phone number, then you can steal a lot of their online identity. And so, but anyway, so I was now on high alert that, you know, somebody was trying to take my account. I actually ended up calling my mobile provider and saying, you know, "Definitely I'm not changing my SIM anytime soon. Lock it down, ignore these requests, et cetera." But then it started happening with other things. You know, I got a request from Uber, you know, where somebody's trying to sign into your Uber account. You know, "Do you approve of this?" And Amazon. And so clearly I was being, quote unquote, digitally attacked. Somebody was trying to get into my online accounts. Okay, here's where I fell for the flaw. But you know, in my own defense, I was freaked out, right? I'm like, gosh, somebody's trying to get into all my accounts. I'm kind of freaked out. I get a text that says, "Hi, this is Google Gmail support. somebody is trying to get into your email. And would you please call us immediately in order to lock down your email? Okay. This was a phishing attack, which, you know, was a fake. This was not Google, but it was an Atlanta number. And so I called this number in Atlanta, Georgia. Guy answered, it sounded very official. You know, hello, Google Gmail customer support. How can I help you? You know, and I told him who I was. I told him, oh, yes, sir, I get it. Don't worry. We can solve this problem for you. We can lock your account down so nobody can get into your email. All I need you to do is read back the two-factor identification I'm just about to send you from Gmail, right? And so I get the Gmail code, right? Of course, he was a bad actor. He now had that code. He instantly could take over my email.
Oh, yeah.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
And so I read back what I shouldn't have read back, which was a two-factor authentication.
Yeah.
He could get in without knowing my password, change my password, lock me out. Then once he had my email, in my case, and it's because Twitter's not as good as giving as many two-factor authentication choices, my two-factor authentication on Twitter was my mail, right? So now he had a control of my mail. He could go get a control of my Twitter. And then he instantly posted on Twitter. He took down a lot of my stuff, and he instantly started posting all the shitcoin stuff and all these, you know, free airdrops and free money and get this and click here and click there, which apparently I was told, and I don't know if this is how it works, but I was told that if people were to click on those links, it could reach into the phone, grab any crypto wallet they had and drain it. I don't know if that's accurate or true. I would imagine somebody would have to make some steps to have that happen. Yeah. But that was their, you know, I have 160,000 plus followers on Twitter. And so they're figuring, I mean, obviously the reason I was a target is they're thinking, hey, if we can, you know, get just a few of these followers, it's a crypto guy, we get a few of these followers, drain their wallet, that's real money, right? So that's why it occurred. You know, the bad news of it was, excuse me, it took a long time to unwind this. I mean, first of all, getting control of my Gmail again was quite tough. Fortunately, my daughter actually works at Google, kind of saved my ass, got me to a very high level techie there who was able to authenticate me. And we got the mail back. That was good. But the Twitter was a much more difficult problem because Twitter has hundreds of millions of users. Mm. And Elon, when he came in order to drive profitability and cut costs, really eliminated a lot of the support. Yeah. So as they say, you know, there just aren't enough people in customer support at Twitter to deal with issues. I mean, it's just, they have thousands of issues and, you know, hundreds of people or, you know, not enough people. And so what I was able to do there was through networking and contacts and cybersecurity people, finally get to somebody who had some drag at Twitter, which is kind of what it took. And they were able to, you know, reach out to their contact at Twitter and say, this is a special case. You got to go down and focus on it right now and restore it. And so I did, it took me a week or two, but I did get restored on Twitter and all was good. And I set up a different two-factor FA. But back to the original risk was I was going to get SIM swapped. And I immediately called some of my friends in the crypto space who've been SIM swapped. And SIM swapping, and for those who are familiar and unfamiliar with it, it's really important. It's where somebody would steal your phone number. And it can create a lot of havoc because they can get into your bank account, they can wire money, they can do all kinds of things if you're using, because as you know, when you're doing two-factor, most people have their two-factor authentication set up on their phone. They haven't taken the time to put it on Authy or Google Authenticator. They don't have the little, I'm forgetting the name, but there's a little dongle thing that you can buy.
Yeah, yeah.
That you know, is also an authenticator.
YubiKey, I think.
YubiKey, yep. Exactly. Thank you. And I've ordered some of those, by the way. And so in any case, the SIM swap problem has become really a big problem because unfortunately what they're uncovering is that in some of these phone companies, there's corruption. And so if you get a bad employee, and it's not just the phone company, it can be the phone company store, but if you get a bad employee that has some override codes, they can get in there and override the protections and let somebody will steal your phone number. So to those listening, what I would say that you will know that if you ever wake up, turn on your phone and there's literally no phone service, you've been SIM swapped. Your phone doesn't work. Immediately go to another phone, call your cellular provider, tell them what happened and unwind it. But in my case, what I did, because it was recommended to me by so many of the security experts, and this is a shameless plug, but I don't get anything for it. And I like them. They're very good. There's a company called Efani, E-F-A-N-I. This company sits on top of your cellular provider and controls the keys to your SIM card so that even if there were a malevolent actor at the cell provider, they're not able to change the settings on your SIM card. Oh. Now, you pay a service for this, and it's not cheap. Frankly, it's about $1,000 a year. But if you're a high-profile person, in my case, I have 160,000 followers, you know, I'm a target for SIM swapping. And there have been people like me who've been SIM swapped multiple times. And so in my case, it was worth, and I've now signed up with Afani, and it's been a very good experience. So, you know, never, ever read a two-factor authentication to anybody on the phone until you've verified who they are. And that was the mistake that I made. But, you know, in my defense, I was susceptible to the mistake because I felt like I was being attacked.
It's great that you're honest about it.
Yeah, like, look, I don't mind. I mean, like my daughter said, Dad, you're an idiot. And I am, but I'd rather tell, you know, I'd rather warn people because these crooks have gotten pretty sophisticated, right?
Yeah, I mean, yeah. They can. And it's going to get worse with the AI when they can pretend, you know.
Well, that's, so it's funny. I'm not going to tell who it was, but I called somebody in that we all know in the Bitcoin community. And I said, you know, it's Larry and help me with this. And he said, hang on a second. You're Larry. When was the last time I saw you? And I told him, what hobby do we have in common?
Yeah.
He said, okay, you're really Larry. I said, why did you do that? And he said, because it's not going to be long until somebody's going to be able to listen to 2 hours of you speaking, and they're going to have a voice generation capability where they can call up and pretend to be you, and it's going to sound like you. Isn't that amazing?
It is amazing, and it's scary at the same time. It's
totally scary. And think about it. They could do it with your kids. You know, hey, Dad, it's Neil. You know, I mean, oh, my God. It would terrify you, right?
Yeah, so you need to say something that only you would say.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And that's why what I've done with my family is, you know, you have safe words.
Yeah.
You have words that you make a point, you know, to say that indicate that either something's not right here. Right.
So does my family. We have safe words, but I'm not able to say them on camera.
No, nobody would. That's
for several reasons.
Yeah, that violates the whole purpose of the thing.
Yeah, you think you're making a joke, but
if my son were to call up and say, "Hey, Dad, I'm in trouble. I need some money. I'm here. You know, this, that, and the other. You got to do this, that, and the other."
Yeah.
And I would say, "Okay, fine. What's our safe word?" You know, and you know, they wouldn't know it, right?
The thing is, genuinely, you probably don't know this about me, but I cybersecurity is my day job.
And oh, is that right?
Yeah,
oh, interesting.
Yeah, totally. And what you're saying is you are not an idiot. I'm saying that cybersecurity awareness is a difficult thing because, as you're saying, everything is moving so fast. And the scenario you described, very sophisticated. These are people with resources and dedication. And the best cybersecurity in the world really, really doesn't work with someone with unlimited resources to pull off the attack. It just doesn't work. And I would say that basically universally, all you can do is delay it, put up layers of defenses, this and that.
Fair enough. Let me ask you about that AI, that voice AI. Is that a real threat eventually?
Oh, absolutely it is.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow. Tomorrow.
It is.
Like soon. It's very soon.
Wow.
Very soon. I mean, they can make videos from a picture now. Like,
can they?
Yeah.
I'm not following this, but yeah.
Yeah, funny thing, I had a conversation with my mother about this.
Okay.
And she's like, do you know that you have to be, because she's been a target for various
scams.
Simpler scams, but still. And I tell her, like, these things are going to get more sophisticated. And she replies, I know exactly what they're trying to do because I watch public service news channels and they tell me what to do. Yeah, you fell for the most basic scam of them all.
The public service.
You're watching the public service. Status propaganda.
Yeah. Fair enough.
No, but the point I wanted to make, though, is that you're doing exactly the right thing in the aftermath, building the awareness of exactly what happened, and now you have new defense mechanisms. I think the safe word thing is fantastic. Everyone should absolutely do that, because that is the only way to really safeguard against this stuff, because the technology, right?
That is just freaky. I mean, that's freaky that somebody could call up and sound like somebody you know and love. And, you know, that's terrifying. Yeah.
And I don't mean to sound like everyone is inevitably going to get hacked. Knut was right. It gets costly, but if someone really wants to and is willing to spend the cost, then yeah, basically all the technology can eventually get in there somehow. So you need to have non-technology means of dealing with this, right? Yeah. And the safe words is the perfect thing. And the in-person connections is the perfect thing. You know, friends who know you for you, right?
Yeah. We
use Fediment.
Yeah.
That's actually a thing here.
Well, and genuinely, Bitcoin and cryptography is one of the only solutions here, basically, that you have something that if you can sign a message from a Bitcoin address that you control, that's genuinely hard to get into as long as you're doing the right key management sort of thing.
Right.
Got your private key on a hardware device. Yeah,
a lot of this conference has been, a lot of the talks I've been having here is like, conversations I've been having is about how public to private public key cryptography is becoming a thing in people's lives, like especially with Noster catching on a bit more. People are getting like comfortable with like, hang on a minute.
Who are you? Prove it.
And I think that's a good thing because it's the first step to taking responsibility.
It's going to be absolutely essential because when you think of AI and all the power that these people are going to have to just bomb you with this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to have to be able to fight back.
Yes, and they're not Nigerian princes anymore. No. These are sophisticated people.
I mean, somebody told me about the algorithms they have for cracking passwords, and I was stunned.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, they get a couple of your passwords because they know the pattern, and that's, scary stuff.
Yeah, everyone should use a password manager, basically, is the advice I give, is use a password manager and generate a new password with every single site or that you use. Don't reuse passwords.
Does that include Google's built-in password manager in Chrome?
No, use something that's not that.
Are you familiar with 1Pass? And do you have a good opinion of it?
1Pass, Bitwarden.
That's the one I use.
All good stuff. All good stuff. LastPass is the one that's had the most issues. Sorry to kind of throw them under the bus.
Yeah, I heard 1Pass seemed to be the best from the reviews I read. Yeah.
Probably there's three or four that are like pick one and you're set. So And this is all just to say that the summary is YubiKey, like a hardware key. And these safe words, that's the best you can do, really. Plus the SIM swapping defense. I mean, you're putting up defenses. That's the point. And this is true for anyone in the space. Number go up, right? Everyone who's in the space eventually, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Target. So I mean, it's a little tricky. Yeah,
make
to get
it costly
around.
To attack you.
That's right.
That's how you defend yourself online. Like
No, they're looking for easy marks. They don't want to mess with it if it's tough.
And hopefully there wasn't anything permanent out of this. I mean,
at some point I thought they were going to try and mine my, my email and find something. And, I was actually quite relieved when all I realized is that they were trying to get shitcoiners to, steal their shitcoins. I mean, it's like, okay, fine. I mean, I get it. I know why you did that, but, cause they could have, I don't know, I've got 10 years of email in that file and make it, AI that, and that would be scary, right?
So how long was this incident? How long was
I'll tell you exactly what it's because it's Saturday morning. I'm out running errands, and it happened while I'm in my car running errands. I had to pull over to the side of the car to kind of deal with all this shit because they keep getting the SIM swap thing. I'm like, hang on a second, I gotta focus on this. I lost the email. My daughter wasn't able to get me to the right person at Google until Sunday, so I lost the email and I lost the Twitter, and I mean quickly. I went home immediately, tried to log in, email couldn't get in. Went home, Twitter account couldn't get in. It's like, uh-oh, I've been attacked. Took me a day to recover Google, and I don't think the average human would be able to get it back in a day. I think I was lucky because my daughter works there and she got me to the right place really quickly. And the Twitter was over a week. And involved, getting some security experts involved, and I had to tip them a little bit of money to spend time on it, and that was fine. I didn't mind doing that because they were working to get me my account back, and I wanted my account back. So
have you heard of Start9?
I have, I run my own node. I've got a Start9 node that
I
run.
You do?
Yeah absolutely.
Awesome
yeah
so that's, we've been looking into that a lot lately, and it's a fantastic idea, and it seems like a fantastic product.
That's a really good company with good products.
So it's basically de-cloudifying computing and
I have great hopes for things like this and Noster and all of these things, and I know people who are getting out of Gmail and going to more decentralized mail servers and so on and so forth. I mean, my problem is I'm not technological, and so I'm I don't want to have a full-time techie on my payroll to do all of this, and so it's not simple
But there's always going to be trade-offs between convenience and responsibility.
Correct.
And safety. Was that a Benjamin Franklin quote? Like any society that will give up a little security to gain or a little freedom to gain a little security will deserve neither and lose both or something.
Well, genuinely, in cybersecurity, it's the trade-off between security and convenience. Every single piece of cybersecurity is an inconvenience, and everyone knows it. I mean, no one is thrilled that they have to have a certain strength password or that they have to do this and that with their with their IT system and all this. And Bitcoiners, I think we have to do that little bit extra layer because there's the responsibility, the self-custody, all this, right? But no, it's entirely exactly this. And I mean, it's unfortunate that we're in that situation, but
yeah, and as you say, it'll only get worse. But
as long as bad actors exist, but maybe Bitcoin can help fix the incentives, right?
Well, that's right. A little bit of preparation.
Yeah, I think one of the more beautiful things is this, the 12 words, the 12 magic words, because it's so simple. It gives you the same level of complexity, but through such a simple means.
Well, and there's a certain beauty to, you know, writing them down analog, right?
I would never let the words exist on my computer.
You know, there's nowhere digital that those words exist.
Yeah, and then people say Bitcoin is too hard, but like, how hard is writing
down? BIP39 was an enormously important development in self-custody world. Yeah. And so, I mean, the notion that you can get on an airplane, go anywhere in the world, you know, have a BIP39 device and reestablish control of your coins with 12 words, that's just so powerful.
So having talked a lot about these complexities and these trade-offs, the natural follow-up question is gold just Bitcoin for boomers?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it's, you know, it's not useless. And gold people shouldn't, Bitcoiners should not. I mean, we just saw Michael Saylor. I love Michael Saylor. I love absolutely everything about him. The only thing the entire time I've known him and seen him operate that I disagreed with him on was when he said gold was the enemy. Because and I'll tell you why. It offended gold people, and his goal should be to convert gold people to Bitcoiners. You know, and so he shouldn't view them as the enemy. In fact, in many ways, they're an ally because they're anti-fiat already. If you own gold, you're anti-fiat by definition. You got there. The odds are very good that you got there because you're an Austrian economist, or you understand monetary debasement. And actually, I view my role in this whole development. I was in gold, just background for people who don't know who I am, haven't listened to this before. I've been in the gold investment since, you know, the 1990s, okay? I was buying gold in 2000, 2001. I mean, before Bitcoin ever existed, I was a sound money gold guy. And by the way, before Bitcoin ever existed, it was your best monetary debasement protection. You know, it's now second best by quite a measure, but at the time, it was your best.
There is a second best.
Yeah, there is. There is. I mean, it's not even close. He's right. It's not close in terms of performance. But if I had, you know, if somebody said to me, I want to own sound money that's not Bitcoin, what would you buy? I'd probably say, in this order, I'd probably say silver and gold. I mean, silver's so deeply undervalued, and that's a whole another story. But the point is that gold is analog sound money and has been for 5,000 years, and Bitcoin is digital sound money, and Bitcoin's going to eat, you know, all of gold's premium someday. But not tomorrow. That's an important thing for people to understand. The notion that the price of gold is going to actually go down while the price of gold of Bitcoin is going up, I don't think that's true. I think nominally the price of gold will continue to go up. There are 8 billion people, and a lot of them aren't ready to accept Bitcoin. And so for them, gold represents the second best form of sound money. It has gone up at 7 or 8% a year compounded, and it does represent something the government can't debase and print. So, you know, it's very inferior to Bitcoin. I mean, I agree with that. I don't, you know, and over time, my gold holdings will become a small fraction of the value of my Bitcoin holdings. That's already happened in a large part because my Bitcoin's gone up so much. And today, I do not buy any more gold. In fact, I have sold some gold, but I keep some because what it represents is money that can't be debased, that doesn't have the volatility of Bitcoin. And the thing I would ask people to consider and remember is that, let's say you're 70 years old, and let's say you're trying to figure out where to put $10 million in savings, okay? You know, Saylor would say, take the whole $10 million and put it in Bitcoin, and don't worry about it. You know, you're going to be fine. Okay, fine. But you're 70. You might die when you're 80.
Borrow another 10 and invest more.
and by the way, in the next 10 years, you might need some of it, right? And as we all know, there are times when Bitcoin has gone down 50% or more. Right. So if you put the whole 10, if you got the timing wrong on Bitcoin, you put the whole 10 in Bitcoin and it went down 50%, you wouldn't be feeling so great. And so, you know, again, and that has to do with your age. I mean, if you're 20, you know, you put it all in Bitcoin, you don't care because you got a very long time you got a very long life left. But gold has never really drawn down more than 24% a year. And in that year, it recovered pretty quickly the next year. So gold is, it doesn't go up as fast, but it also doesn't go down. Yeah. And so, you know, for wealth preservation and fiat in gold terms and fiat in Bitcoin terms is always going down. So if you're 70 and you've got 10 million of savings, and we're leaving stocks out for a minute, you're looking to put it in something that represents quote unquote money, you know, your choices are silver, gold, and Bitcoin. You know, I can see there's an argument to hold some silver and some gold. I mean, there really is.
Yeah. So doesn't that make, is gold to Bitcoin what silver is to gold in that sense then?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, silver's a unique case. And here's why. Silver is a monetary metal, right? It's been money for a long, long time. But it's actually also an industrial metal. And we don't have a big stockpile of silver in the world. We have 200 some odd thousand tons of gold in the world. All the gold that's ever been mined, we either have it. It's around a woman's neck, it's in a vault, or it's in the form of coins. Okay, or it's at the bottom of the ocean if the boat sank, right? That's where all the gold is. And so if we need gold, you can always find it. It's available. Silver is you eat it, it gets used as we produce it. We produce about 900 million ounces of silver a year. We use over 900 million ounces of silver a year, and we melt down silverware and, we recover it sometimes from old technology. You know, there are people who grind up computers to get the silver on the circuit boards. So because of that, if there's ever a big increase in demand for silver, we've got 900 million ounces coming out of the ground every year. That's it. And that's why it's the prices can be very spiky. It's like that marginal barrel of oil. You know, as they say, you know, the oil market, 3% change in demand in the oil market can send oil up 40%, because right at the margin, you really need that oil. I mean, you got to run those boats. You need the goddamn oil. The same is true with silver. And one of the interesting things about silver is that the uses are really growing. It's used heavily in solar. And as we all know, solar is a big part of, ESG and where we're going there. You can debate whether that's a good thing or a bad thing in terms of, it's a cost efficiency, but fact of the matter is we're doing it. And the projections that we look at show that within 5 years, China, which now consumes maybe little under 20% of all the silver produced in the world, will consume over 55% of the silver produced in the world for solar. So there's a growing demand case. So, when you look at silver, it's a little hard, to say, is this a monetary metal, or is this, what it represents, other than copper, it's better conductivity than copper, but it's more expensive.
Yeah.
But in terms of at a certain level of conductivity, it's the most efficient metal for its price. And so it's really needed in certain circuitry, certain electrical cars, solar panels, etc. So silver is a special case.
We're thrilled to introduce our new sponsor, the BitBox 02 Bitcoin Only Edition.
BitBox.
It's fully open source, Swiss engineered, and Bitcoin only forever. The device only supports Bitcoin, which means less code, less attack surface, and improved security for your Bitcoin. Check out the BitBox 02 Bitcoin Only Edition at bitbox.swiss/freedom.
And use code freedom for and use code freedom for 5% off.
The show is also sponsored by Orange Pill App, the Bitcoin only social network where you can stack friends who stack sats. Make local connections and find all the nearby meetups, see what's going on in your area, and connect with Bitcoiners around you. And now, with a brand new merchant section, it's easier than ever to find and connect with local businesses that accept Bitcoin.
The best part about Orange Pill App is that you know that it's high signal because you're paying for Orange Pill App, and so is everyone else. There are no Asian ladies asking you how your trade is going on Orange Pill App, because it's not a trading app. It's a dating app. Is it a dating app?
So download the Orange Pill app on Apple or Android, send us a DM, and start building your local network of Bitcoiners.
Yeah. So speaking of, cost at the margin and everything and oil, there was this thing during when that boat got stuck in the Suez Canal and during COVID or during the lockdowns. And there was a point where they had to sell oil at a negative price. You remember that?
Yeah, I remember it extremely well. And that was because they didn't have anywhere to store it.
No, exactly. It was cheaper for them to sell it at a negative price.
Right. They had a real problem. Yeah.
So could that happen on a Bitcoin standard in your view?
That's a great question. I'm not sure I know how to answer that. I'm not sure I'm right.
It just struck me. So I haven't thought it through myself either.
Yeah, I'd have to take a while to get my head around that. I don't know. I suppose it could, because I think that's a thing specific. I mean, the reason there was a negative price is that people were literally paying somebody to say, I don't, even though I'm committed to buy this oil from you, I can't take it. I don't want it. So I will pay you more money to not give it to me, even though I've paid you to give it to me, right? I think that's what the negative price was. So I think that could happen on fiat Bitcoin. I don't think it necessarily the monetary standard matters. I think it was a storage supply demand problem, you know, where somebody was going to get some oil that they had nowhere to put and they weren't going to be able to pour in the ocean.
The thing I doubt about that is if the demand would ever be high enough for that to happen if you had a totally sound money.
Fair enough.
Because like you're incentivized to save it rather than spend it all.
Correct.
Maybe it's self-correct. Correct.
Well, and what I think caused that to occur was the big COVID shock.
Lockdown shock.
Yeah. And the lockdown shock, right. That, you know, rocked the monetary system.
Yeah.
And, I think if we'd been on a Bitcoin standard, the monetary system would not have gotten rocked in the same fashion. Because, I mean, what happened there is, as you'll recall, the central banks had to just open the floodgates and pour money into the system.
But not only that, I mean, the politicians themselves wouldn't have that much power to begin with.
There's that too.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a plethora of effects that would stop this. Yeah, it's a fun thing to think about.
It is interesting to think about. I mean, you know, we were talking about it at dinner last night. I mean, the way that the world will be, I think very few people, even probably us, can't really fully understand how much better and different the world will be on a full Bitcoin standard, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be a whole lot better and different. I mean, you know, I map it to kind of some things I remember in my lifetime. When I started out, the IBM PC had just come out in 1980. I started my career. And so that was, you know, what is it now? 40 odd years ago. And, you know, if somebody had told me what PCs would be doing today, what we'd have today in terms of, I just said, that's science fiction. There's just no way.
No, it's a James Bond's wet dream 20 years ago or 30 years ago, or just a smartwatch, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just like, I can't believe that could all be possible. And yet that's what the microprocessor brought us.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that the Bitcoin standard for the money, the monetary system, which has been broken for thousands of years, I think it's going to be a similar change. And none of us can really fully understand how much better and different it'll be, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be better and different.
I totally agree. And we had a brief conversation with Michael Saylor about this yesterday, and Jeff's been talking about it a lot, like that the money is poisoned, it has an amount of poison in it, which alters the way, like, all of human history is wrong. It's written by the winners, and not necessarily winners who won because they produced because they produced things of value to their fellow men, but all of history is false. Like, it's full of lies because the money itself has this layer of lies built into it. And if you remove all that and all you have is truth and all you have is sound, truly sound money, like, we have no idea what that will do.
And what it did was it allowed the wrong people to get in charge.
Exactly.
Because, you know, let's face it, great wealth gives you the ability to control governments, set rules, you know, to take advantage of people, blah, blah, blah. And when the money is broken, evil people, by definition, will figure out how to use that to their own advantage and then become, you know, dominant and take advantage of those who have less power and less money. And so that's the story of human history, right? I mean, warfare, all of it. So, I'm not saying, you know, Bitcoin ends war, but it might. It's within the realm of possibility, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, what would the incentive be? What would the incentive be for anybody?
Yeah, no.
There would be no incentives.
No, if you can't know how much another person owns,
right,
which is true now for everyone on Earth,
right,
because they might have Bitcoin in their heads.
Yeah.
And if you can't very easily take it by force, because you don't even know if they have it, and you don't know even if you manage to take a part of it, you don't know how much of, still have more.
I mean, and let's take the most recent example. I mean, you know, okay, so Russia invades Ukraine, something we don't like, and the U.S. says, guess what? Those $600 billion of assets, you know, that are in the Western system, they're ours. We're grabbing them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And now they're going to give them to the Ukrainians, you know, give the money to the Ukrainians. And I mean, look, I'm not endorsing Russia invading Ukraine. I mean, that's a whole different issue and story, a lot of two sides of that as well. But the point is that, you know, when you've got a system where, you know, you can see powerful actors just stealing, literally stealing money from other powerful actors, you know, that's like, what's this all about? This isn't right.
No, no. But given a long enough time frame, they won't be able to.
Well, that's my point.
Because of that, you know, if you don't know how much another person owns, and if you can't take it by force, it's more profitable to you to give them something in return instead of trying to take stuff by force.
Yeah.
So it moves the shelling point of violence.
Like, exactly. And that's exactly right. That's the point I'm making. And that's why, yeah, one could dream and envision that there might be kind of much less war. I mean, probably still be criminal activity. There'll probably still be gangs and so forth. I mean, but you know,
but they would be less profitable, and that's the point.
Well, that's like, true too.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Including if it's a highway robberman, a mafia, or a government, or another criminal organization like that.
Yeah.
And I think that notion is one of the, you know, binding things that this group of people have. Like that's why we're passionate, because it's really give peace a chance, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, yeah. I mean, and a lot of people in Bitcoin have come at it that way. I mean, they come for the number goes up. I mean, let's face it, everybody's got a certain amount of greed in them. Nobody wants to suffer economically, and that's fine. That's human nature. But then once they really get enlightened to do it, they really realize this is much more than the number goes up.
No, this is love go everywhere.
Exactly. Exactly. This is, you know, fairness. It's just like, imagine if we had a fair world, you know, and I'm not, again, you can't be naive. I mean, there will always be bad actors. There are bad humans out there, but you know, if you make it a lot harder to do unfair things, you incentivize everybody to do what's right. And, you know, and that's a good thing.
Yeah. But that's also a thing, like there's a good point to be made to be not too over enthusiastic and over optimistic, but as you say, nobody knows where this leads.
We don't know.
The passion we have for this thing is real. It's totally absolutely real. And like the more of it we spread, like the more other people can see that we just live in a better world.
And the thing is, it's just so damn intrinsically obvious. Do you know what I mean? To me, that it's going to happen. I mean, you know, it's spreading. It's spreading like a virus. I mean, that's what Michael's, speech was just about, which is, you know, we've got to spread the word on this thing, because the faster this goes, the better and the sooner we'll get to where we want to be. And it's interesting. I'll bring up something, and I'm going to talk about this when I'm on my panel, but I think it's helpful because I'm one of the older guys in the space. I'll never forget, in the 80s, I was a venture capitalist. I was investing in technology companies. You have to remember, back then, technology companies were IBM. Do you know what I mean? And Prime and DEC. And I mean, you know, mini computers, and, you know, the PC had just come out. A lot of the big guys were saying, oh, these are a toy. Nobody's, you know, this is a glorified word processor, You can't do anything else with it. And, you know, Lotus 1-2-3 had just come out on a spreadsheet. It was going to change the world. But anyway, Microsoft came public in 1986. Okay. They did a public offering, and they came public at 14 times trailing earnings, which is low. And they were growing at 40% a year, and they had the MS-DOS contract, and, you know, they were doing extremely well with it. And I'll never forget, the talk on Wall Street was, you know, the software stuff, it's ones and zeros. You can't really touch it. It's intangible. It's like, how can it really have value? I'm not going to invest in a software company because they don't have value. Hardware companies have value. IBM has value. You know, DEC has value. People who make tangible machines that do computing operations have value. The software that runs on it, and that's just kind of a subsidiary thing that comes along with the value in the machine. I mean, how much does this sound like what we're going through right now?
Yeah.
Right. And at the same time, I was with my business school roommate and his roommate from Harvard College, a guy named Steve Ballmer. And we were walking along the Charles River, and Ballmer was saying, Larry, this thing is going to be in every single house. It's going to be on every single machine. You know, the entire world is going to use computing power, and MS-DOS is going to be driving it. This company is going to be worth billions of dollars. And my eyes just kind of opened up. It's like, wow, he might be right. And of course, he was right, but I couldn't see it. I mean, I kind of could see it, but I had no idea how spectacularly right he was going to be. And I look at the Bitcoin thing, and I look at kind of the adoption. I look at where we are in the early curve of it. It's the same thing. I mean, it is going to be, there is no doubt in my mind, this is going to be the base layer. We are going to price everything in sats. We're going to be at, you know, someday we'll be at a penny a sat parity. That'll be a $1 million coin. That's not that far out. And I think beyond that, at some point, we'll be at a dollar a sat parity, you know, and there won't be any dollars anymore.
Everything divided by 21 million.
Yeah, it's exactly. The, you know, there's a guy who wrote a book about it. It was really cool. And he also has this really cool logo that I really respect. So yeah, everything divided by 21 million. Right. So it's that kind of a fundamental base layer change. And, you know, I mean, any new innovation. I mean, when the automobile was invented, could you foresee the interstate highway system?
No, and it took a decade for horses to disappear.
Of course. And when the airplane was invented, could you foresee, you know, the Concorde? Do you know what I mean? I mean,
the Concorde is a story. It's not really around anymore.
No, I get it.
I don't know if you know this. There are still horses.
Yeah. But duh.
Yeah. But the point is, one has to have a little bit of imagination and look out in a 5, 10, 15, 20-year time frame and recognize that we are in front of a digital revolution of money here. And those who understand it and embrace it and invest in it are going to benefit enormously. I mean, my subsidiary story to that Microsoft story was I bought stock in Microsoft on that IPO. And it went up. I think, I can't remember exactly, but I think I made 2 or 3 times my money. It's good, a few years, right? Well, I needed to buy a condominium. You know, I need a place to live and I'm renting. And all right. I sold my Microsoft stock because I needed a down payment, right?
Ouch.
That was a big fucking mistake. That stock, I mean, split adjusted, they came public at 6 cents a share. It's now at $300 a share.
Yeah.
That's like 47,000 times. I mean, right? I fucked up.
It's almost as good as Bitcoin.
Exactly. Well, arguably Bitcoin's even better because that's just one technology in one segment.
Yeah.
Admittedly, it was the leading PC technology until Apple came along, and that's a big deal. But actually, Bitcoin's bigger because it's the base layer of everything.
Yes, exactly.
Right? And that's just the base layer. That, you know, MS-DOS was which grew into Windows and everything else, but, you know, Microsoft is the base layer of the computing world, which is a big deal.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. It's a very big deal. But you know, Bitcoin's the base layer of all money. I mean, compute everything. And so yeah, it is bigger. Bitcoin is bigger.
That speaks to my heart, that story about Microsoft, because I have a similar experience, even though a little later, because I vividly remember being like between 16 and 18 and see, this is, I must have been a bit older. I'm born in 76 and say internet took off 95, 96 or something. So I'm 19, 20 years old. And I see, like, in the beginning, I could really see, like, that nobody understands how big this is. Like, all computers are going to be connected.
Right.
How you
So you
just
got it early, yeah.
No, yeah, well, I wish I did. I wish I had
some money.
Or at least some interest in taking a bigger role in, you know, computing and internet in general. But instead, I went and became a sea captain, which is sort of what just happened. Like for every young person, you try stuff.
Yeah, it was a dream. You wanted to do it, and you did it.
But when Bitcoin came along, I had the exact same feeling. I see this thing, and this time, I'm not going to be. You know,
I'm not going to miss it.
No,
yeah.
I'm not going to miss this boat. Pun intended.
I've had 3 cycles. So I had the Microsoft cycle. You know, the PC goes from nothing to being an important thing. Then I got very lucky in '92 or '93. Somebody gave me a card with an internet address on it. It was CompuServe, and said, "Send me those files to my internet address." What the hell's that? They said, "Well, you have a Novell.
You have a perfectly good fax machine over here."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You have a Novell LAN, right? You can link your computer. Yeah. Imagine if you could send email anywhere in the world. I was like, "Oh shit, that's powerful," right? And so I went and got an account, and then I went to my guys. We were a venture capital firm, and we invested in all the internet companies we could find.
Yes.
And in '94, '93, and '94, it worked really well. That fund, $25 million fund, returned like $150 million. I mean,
and
it was.
And then you send your first email. I am a Nigerian prince. Please.
Yeah. And if you just send me some money, I can get you $5 million.
Send me one and I will give you
I will give you $5 million. Exactly. Yeah. I've been stolen from me. Yeah. So, look, humans learn through experience, and pattern recognition is an important part of experience and investing. And to me, the Bitcoin revolution is just, it's PCs, it's the internet, it's just the next step. And therefore, you know, anyone listening to this who's scared of it, I encourage you to just go learn, ask questions. Yeah. Bitcoiners are very friendly. They'll try and help you. They want to help you because they recognize how important it is for all people to protect themselves.
Yeah, but as you say, like computers is just one sector. I'd say Bitcoin will do to finance what the wheel did to transportation.
Yes. Like, yeah.
It's even bigger than computers.
It's much bigger. Yeah. It's absolutely much bigger.
Touches everything.
Yeah. And I mean, the thing that's so interesting about it to me, and it really is an experiment. That's the only way to in my mind to describe it, is there has never been a commodity in the world that does not respond to higher prices. In other words, if price of gold goes up, we're going to mine more gold.
Yeah.
Price of oil goes up, we're going to drill for more oil. Price of corn goes up, we're going to grow more corn. Every commodity known to man, price will drive supply and demand. Supply, this is an algorithmically fixed supply, asymptotically decreasing every 4 years. And as a result of that, it's just not going to change. And that's why when Saylor said this is going up forever, Loris, he's right.
Yeah.
It actually will go up forever. We've never seen digital scarcity before. Never.
No. Nor absolute scarcity.
Yes. Correct. Yeah. That's correct. So yeah, I think what's tough for investors and people looking at this, it's kind of tough to get your brain around it, because it's a new thing, right?
Augustine Carstens, that Bank of International Settlements.
Yeah.
When I see the picture of his one button on his jacket,
yeah.
I think of Bitcoin because that's like immovable object. Meet unstoppable force.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
No offense, Augustine.
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
Pretty sure you meant defense.
Oh, defense, maybe. I'm talking about Bitcoin is defense.
All right.
Yeah, they're trying to kill it. So it's fair to fight back. Yeah, I mean, it's... I have plenty of time for anyone who's a skeptic. I have no time for people who are... just parroting and hating on it, because they know it's going to ruin their privilege.
Have you ever heard a Bitcoin critic that understands Bitcoin?
Not really. No.
Not really, right?
No. No. I mean, if you scratch pretty hard, you can't really get there. I mean, a lot of the gold guys use the intrinsic value argument, but as Menger taught us, all value is subjective, right? I mean, nobody knows, and it's subjective at the point in time. I mean, a glass of water is priceless to a starving man in the desert, but water is ubiquitous in the Alps. So, I haven't ever seen a Bitcoin critic that has a really good argument. And a lot of times they don't fully understand it. And they haven't taken the time to do the work. I mean, I think a lot of the critics are smart enough to recognize that it represents a threat to their privilege.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people. I mean, I'll tell you who I throw in this bucket. I throw Jamie Dimon in that bucket.
Yeah.
Right. No. I think he understands it. I think he knows what it is. I think he knows
what it
means.
You think so?
Yeah.
Understand. Even after that last interview when he was all blockchain and no use case and only criminals.
Yeah. See, he's just throwing up smoke. I think he knows that's not true. And I think what he's doing is he's saying all of those things in order to defend his privilege because he knows that this is not good for who he is.
If that is the case.
Yeah.
That is, then
he's being disingenuous is my point.
He is a symptom of a rotten system.
He's dishonest.
Because how can you be that dishonest in that position if the system is working?
Well, that's my point. The wrong people have won.
Yeah.
Here's a dishonest guy.
So the global elite are really just the thieves.
Yes, they're dishonest.
The most successful thieves.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he has a horse and pony story to explain, why it's no good because of, it's being used for, nefarious things, which it's not. I mean, it is to a small degree, but so is the dollar.
Yeah.
So is cash. I mean, he was Epstein's banker.
So is water.
You know? Right. Exactly. Yeah.
You can drown people with it. Like that's such a bullshit argument. Like that's all.
Yeah. But I have reason to believe based on, kind of direct context. I have reason to believe he's smarter than that.
All right.
And therefore you're right. He's being dishonest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is worse.
Yeah. Actually, if you were just stupid and didn't truly understand it, that would be bad, but okay. Yeah. He's not very bright. He doesn't get it, but no, it's worse than that in my view. He gets it.
Maybe we can pull this back around. We've been going for about an hour here. And honestly, I think we probably want to get back to this fantastic conference. So what? Anything else on your mind? A preview of something you're talking about? Or,
no, I mean, you know, so when's Bitcoin going to go to $1 million? I don't know. I mean, I follow Samson. He knows. I think we're going to see 100,000 sometime, you know, pretty soon. I mean, you know, 6 months or so. I mean, the halving's coming and so forth. I think it really will get turbocharged when we see the next financial. I mean, I operate a fund that invests in Bitcoin and gold. And so, you know, the Jay Powell pushing up interest rates, that slowed everything down in the monetary debasement world. I think we're about to have something else break. And when something does break, I think we're responsible to print more money again, as they always have.
Yeah.
And that will really be the next turbocharged move that'll take gold over 3,000 and Bitcoin to 500,000 or certainly 200,000, maybe headed towards 500,000. So, those are kind of the things I see ahead. The one piece of information I will say that I've been getting, because I know a lot of people in DC, in the U.S., I think the most acute area of financial distress right now is commercial real estate. You see a lot of these office buildings all over the country getting sold for 30 cents on the dollar.
Mm-hmm.
And those notes are held by the regional banks throughout the United States. And Silicon Valley Bank failed in March of last year. They papered it up, you know, BTFP, all the usual stuff. They put it all back in the camera. There are more of those. There are more of those coming. And the rumor out of D.C., but, it, you know, kind of credible because I've heard a couple of places and people in D.C. talk. Is that they're cobbling together some kind of a resolution trust, you know, new entity that would buy troubled CRE from the banks, you know, in order to protect the banks from the losses.
Yeah.
And of course, buy with what?
Yeah.
Printed money.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, right. And so I think if and when they unroll that kind of a program that says we're gonna backstop all this. I mean, Barry Sternlicht says there's maybe $1.2 billion of just, you know, of worthless CRE debt. I mean, that would be a big, if they backstopped all that, that would be a big number. So, and I think when they do that, you know, the investing world will wake up and go, oh, more monetary debasement. They can never stop. And because they can never stop, I've got to protect myself. And, you know, the old folks who don't understand Bitcoin will say, I know how to do that. I buy gold. And everyone else who's smarter, younger, and studied Bitcoin will go, great. You know, we need to buy more Bitcoin. And so I think they're both going to really start to accelerate. And at some point, they're going to accelerate so much that they're going to, you know, it's going to be the last acceleration, right? And the dollar fails.
And then it goes really crazy.
Yeah. But the other thing to keep in mind, because, and that's on my Twitter feed, people should look at it. You know, we've all kind of, you should look at the chart of the price of gold in Weimar, Germany. There could be some real volatility here.
Yeah. And the guy who came out, the rich, one of the best investors in history, from the Weimar Republic, he's doing exactly what Michael Saylor is doing now.
Exactly. Hugo Stinnes was the inflation king of Weimar.
Yeah.
He borrowed money and bought sound assets with it.
Exactly.
And he paid back the money. The money became worthless. He paid it back.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous strategy, though. You got to be careful because if you get blown out on the borrowing, you don't want to get called in.
No.
But right. Yeah. I don't recommend using leverage, I guess is what I'm saying.
Larry, it's been a fantastic time with you, and you've got a perspective that no one else we really talk to, I think, has. I mean, it's great to hear about the experiences you've had with previous cycles and all that, and the parallels with Bitcoin. But it's great to have you.
The advantage of being old, right? You've seen a lot of shit.
Yeah. And if Larry ever starts tweeting about shitcoins again.
If anyone's paying attention to my feed about 3 weeks ago and there were a bunch of shitcoin tweets, that ain't me. and I hopefully that won't ever happen again. I think we got problem solved. Yeah.
Except if the shitcoin is gold, because then it probably is Larry.
That's right. That's right.
I had to.
I know you did. That's okay.
All right.
I take a lot of heat from Bitcoiners for owning gold, but I'll tell you what. I have helped the cause of Bitcoin a lot because I've been able to convert gold people I would say a gold person is the best person to convert who's become a Bitcoiner like me. It's easier for me to do it because they trust me because they know I'm a real legit gold guy and I've moved over to here. And so like there's a guy called Chris Irons who runs Quoth the Raven on Twitter, is very active.
Oh yeah.
I just orange pilled him. I mean, he's all in. He was 100% gold guy.
All right.
Yeah. So that's, I mean, my role in this whole thing has been to kind of, hey, gold guys, wake up.
So when Peter Schiff?
I tried. I did an hour and a half interview. He is so intransigent. I mean, I Google it. I had a debate with him. Very pleasant. I tried to keep it very professional. He just can't get over it. Although he conceded a few points to me, and to be brutally frank, it would not surprise me. He's too smart. It wouldn't surprise me if he's got in his back pocket, if he's got some. And he's not talking about, part of the reason he doesn't talk about it, he's got an enormous business based on gold, selling gold, investing in gold, you know, clients. He almost can't. I mean, I've got clients who are into gold, but they're, you know, they're flexible and I can migrate. Do you know what I mean? He's got 30 years in gold and so he's kind of trapped. And I think he'd probably lose if he said I like Bitcoin, he'd probably lose a lot of clients. I said I like Bitcoin. I did lose a few clients when I said I like Bitcoin. I lost a few gold guys. I said, "Oh, I'm out." That's not good. I don't want you doing that.
But you gained a whole bunch of friends.
Right. That's exactly right. And so I think Peter might be the last guy to come around. But he's smart enough that, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if he owned some personally. You know, another guy who I think is in the same camp, you know, Brent Johnson from Santiago Capital, the dollar milkshake guy. He's kind of neutral, a little bit neutral on Bitcoin. I'll bet he owns some. He's too smart not to, you know? So anyway, thank you very much. Really great to
great
see you, man.
You there.
Good to see you, brother.
Thanks a lot, Larry.
Very nice to see you.
Yeah. All right. Any last words? Anywhere you want to send
that's
people?
It. That's
no,
it.
We'll,
that's
good. That's good. We'll send the facts about
orange,
the details.
Orange, orange, yeah, orange yeah. pill everybody you can. That's, you know, that was Saylor's message. That's my message. This is going to make the world a better place. And so to the degree that we can do the work of converting people, that's all we can do. Right?
Fantastic, Larry.
Yeah. Great. Thank you so much.
Thank
good
you
to see
so
you
much. This has been the Freedom Footprint Show. Thanks for listening.
Brush your teeth.